Hey, it's John from CityCast. If you're in the mood to pamper yourself a little bit this week while supporting cruelty-free products, you should check out Bon Coeur Home and Wellness. It's the best place in Portland to find everything from chic home decor to cannabis accessories. They've got a curated collection of vegan and cruelty-free home goods and wellness products because their name is French for kind heart, after all. You'll get a 20% discount on your first order when you sign up for emails this week at boncoeur.net. That's boncoeur.net and use the code BONCOEURCITYCAST20. Oregon's elected leaders just spent 35 days racing to pass major laws on everything from the recriminalization of drugs to spending hundreds of millions of dollars on housing to trying to finally fix daylight saving time in Oregon. And it turns out they actually got a lot of it done and somehow managed to get through it all without anybody just storming out of the building. Today on CityCast Portland, Julia Shumway, deputy editor of the Oregon Capitol Chronicle, is here with us to walk through a surprisingly productive short legislative session. What passed, what didn't, and just what the vibes were like. It's Thursday, March 14th. I'm John Notariani, in for Claudia Meza, and this is what Portland's talking about. You know, normally when we talk about the legislature, we're like talking about these huge amounts of like partisan bickering and fighting and gridlock. It sounds like this one actually went really smoothly and they wrapped up early. Like, does that ever happen?
They've wrapped up early. And I will say, even when they're bickering a lot, the vast majority of what the legislature does is bipartisan and kind of boring. Mm-hmm. But this session really was a lot more, especially compared to last year when you saw Republicans walking out for 6 weeks over contentious bills. This one, everyone came in agreeing that their focus would be housing and behavioral health and addiction, and that they would all compromise. And they ended up passing out these huge packages, lots of money, lots of policy changes on really bipartisan votes.
And just before this session started, there was that Supreme Court ruling at the state level that said that 10 of the Republican senators aren't going to be able to run for re-election, right? I mean, right. That's all because of Republican walkouts that had happened in the last session. But what I'm wondering is, like, why did these people play along? It seems like they wouldn't have had any incentive to just not kind of burn the place down.
Yeah, and Senate Republican leader Tim Knope had said something to that effect right before this ruling came down. At an event previewing the session with press, he said that, in his opinion, Republicans won either way, because either they'd get to run for re-election or they would have like no built-in incentive to return and Democrats would have to make it worth their while. And in his opinion, at the end of session, Democrats made it worth Republicans' while.
And how did they do that?
I think you saw a lot of stuff that does reflect, I mean, bipartisan priorities, but Republican priorities as well. Democrats went a lot further when it comes to drug addiction and mental health on recriminalizing drugs to an extent that they would not have if they were not trying to court Republican votes on this package.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, from your perspective, did it feel like the vibes in the session were different than they normally are?
Yeah, I'd say it felt different. It felt a lot friendlier, especially in the Senate. I'd say that there is still a lot of tension early on. We weren't really sure where lawmakers were going to go, especially when it came to that drug addiction piece, what became House Bill 4002, which recriminalized drugs, created a whole new level of misdemeanor for people who are caught with small amounts of drugs. That was something that when Democrats first came out with their proposal, Republicans didn't like it, but they eventually reached a compromise. And by the end of session, we saw very, very friendly votes across the aisle and people getting along with each other in a way that we weren't expecting at the start of session.
I would never have imagined that the takeaway from this session was going to be Republicans and Democrats agree about changes to drug policy. The other really big thing was this giant housing package that the governor was pushing, $376 million. But you're an observer of the legislature professionally. What surprised you about the way that that bill package went through?
The biggest surprise that I had was that the governor, who's used to winning, like before she was the governor, she was Speaker of the House for 9 years. She's got a lot of power in Salem. She's really had the legislature disappoint her on this housing package a couple times. Last year, of course, they failed her housing bill on the very last day of session in the Senate. She had to spend months working on it to try to return with her proposal to allow cities to add a little more land outside of their urban growth boundaries. This year, she came to them asking for $600 million for housing. They gave her a little more than half of that. And so she's still trying to make sure that she has her voice as governor heard in the legislative process and navigating this system where she's not their boss anymore. She's part of a separate but equal branch of government.
It's wild to think of $376 million as a letdown, though. I mean, that's a lot of money to allocate, but like obviously the need that we have in this state is much bigger than that as well.
Yes, and we'll know that we will be back in 2025 with lawmakers allocating more money toward housing, especially some of these infrastructure needs. A lot of cities got money that they wanted to do things like build sewers and water pipes that are necessary to support new homes and existing homes. And a lot of cities didn't get the money they wanted and will be back with their hands out next year.
Yeah, yeah. I did want to loop back to Measure 110 and the changes there. Because there was another bill that I hadn't really heard a lot about that passed that was different than like the efforts to sort of recriminalize drugs. But it was a bill to make drug use on public transportation a crime. Julia, had we been allowed to do drugs on public transit this whole time and we didn't know about it?
No, I mean, not to the extent that you're allowed to do drugs anywhere. Like, I guess there are police officers who would not interfere if they saw people doing drugs on public transit post Measure 110. But this was not like a special carve out where you can hop on the TriMet bus and light up a joint. So this was an interesting bill that passed out. I think Republicans had a fair amount of criticism of it because this bill would make doing drugs on public transit a Class A misdemeanor. That means you can go to jail for up to a year if you're caught doing this. The Measure 110 deal that they reached creates an entirely different level of misdemeanor that is not quite a year in jail, but more than 30 days if mm-hmm. you don't go through a treatment program. And so Republicans who really wanted to make drug use anywhere a Class A misdemeanor didn't understand why you'd have this special carve out for buses. I think it's we've seen a number of things the legislature has done in the past few years, trying to keep transit drivers and hospital workers and some of these other like frontline workers safe from either people attacking them or substance abuse happening and around them. And I think this is another step in that direction.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Julia, I wanted to dig into a couple other things that our listeners might have missed that got past this session. What happened on campaign finance laws, right? Like Oregon had been one of the few states that had no statewide limits on campaign contributions, but we're changing that?
Yeah, provided Governor Kotek signs this, we are going to, ahead of the 2028 election, become a state that actually caps how much money people can give to candidates and other groups. And this is something I was truly surprised by. Like the legislature has fainted at trying to do something on campaign finance reform for years. They never got anywhere. Just a couple days before we found out this proposal was being considered, there were people outside the Capitol gathering signatures for a ballot measure on campaign finance reform because both good government groups and labor groups had all come to the conclusion that the legislature was not going to do anything on this, that they were going to keep punting on the issue. Instead, the threat of those ballot measures got lawmakers to sit down with labor and business and these nonprofit groups that want more transparency in government and mm-hmm. came up with a solution. And they're going to do more work on it next year. But for now, the proposal that the governor gets to sign or veto is going to cap individuals to giving no more than $6,600 per election cycle, which is a huge downgrade for someone like Phil Knight, who's writing these million-dollar checks. Oh. And it's going to put a lot more limits on other spending, too.
Yeah. I mean, it's wild. I feel like campaign finance limits are in almost everyone's interest except for maybe the lawmakers who get to decide mm-hmm. whether or not there are limits. So it is a big deal that they have decided to sort of self-regulate and put those limits in place, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So that was huge. And a part of where campaign finance proposals had always struggled in the legislature is that Democrats who hold the majority there wanted to leave the possibility for these small donor committees or for labor unions to still give big sums. And Republicans did not like that because, of course, unions tend to support Democrats. Rich individuals tend to support Republicans. They had conflicting ideas about who should be allowed to give a lot.
Yeah, yeah. Well, speaking of funding, another bill that passed, $30 million that's going to be going into basically summer school programs in districts across the state, which is great. It's something that schools need. But I was wondering, that summer school funding, did that have anything to do with like the pressure and the conversations that we had about school funding last year during the Portland teachers strike?
There's not a direct connection to that funding, that the structure of school funding is going to be more of a conversation in the long legislative session next year. There wasn't as much time for it this year, even as, you know, Portland just went through a very long strike. We're staring down a potential teacher strike here in Salem. It is an issue facing a lot of schools. Summer school funding really took off during the pandemic as kids were being left out or doing a lot of work from home in school, mm-hmm. missing out on a lot of classroom development and some of the teaching. And so there was a lot more federal money to support this. They ended up with no state funding for summer school last year, and a lot of programs that had existed the last couple of years just went away.
So
and so it was a priority from both lawmakers and Governor Kotek this year to try to get some money out the door quickly for schools.
Yeah, that's wild that there isn't statewide funding for summer school. That seems like something that so many families rely on.
Yeah, it was really interesting. I think I would say last year, a big part of the issue was just that because this funding isn't set in stone and it's not something that they go back to every year, like funding the state school fund, there is mm-hmm. a very early deadline to get that funding out to schools so they can plan their programs. And they blew past that deadline with a new governor and a lot of new lawmakers.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's take a quick break and then talk a little bit about some of the bills that didn't make it through this session. Well, I want to pivot and talk about some of the things that did not pass this year, Julia. I thought for sure that we were going to get something done on daylight saving time. It seemed like we were right there, and then it fell apart. What happened?
So that one was fascinating because it fell apart twice. So the first time, Senator Kim Thatcher was really excited. She's the senator who led the push to go to permanent daylight time a few years ago. We can't actually switch to permanent daylight time without an act of Congress, but we can switch to standard time. And so she came back with a proposal to try to switch Oregon to standard time. Similar proposals were introduced in Washington and Idaho and California, but didn't go anywhere. And Thatcher was really, really set on making Oregon be the first state. Basically, we would switch to standard time and Washington and California would have to follow our lead because they'd be sick of driving to Vancouver, driving to Southern Oregon and having to change their clocks. Mm-hmm. Other senators were not into that idea. So her bill failed 15-15 on the Senate floor, goes back to a committee, comes out again saying we will switch to standard time and when Washington and California do the same, passes the Senate, gets to the House. House Speaker Dan Rayfield takes one look at it and says, this is too much. We've like 5 days left of session. We're not doing this. And so we are once again a little sleepy a couple days after daylight saving time started because we're still doing this clock switching thing.
How does this keep going on? We've been talking about this for years. another bill that didn't make it. This is something that we talked about in our preview of this session, wildfire prevention and response. Another thing that seems like everybody should be able to agree on. Didn't happen, though. Didn't make it through. Do you know what happened there?
So there, I think the issue was also having too little time in this session. You had a few competing proposals from different lawmakers about the best way to pay for wildfire prevention. Right now, most of that money comes out of the state general fund. There is a proposal from Senator Elizabeth Steiner that would slightly increase the timber harvest tax that timber producers pay by indexing it to inflation, while also giving the timber industry a fee break by reducing the wildfire protection fees they pay. Mm. There's another proposal from Paul Hovey and Jeff Golden that would have created a severance tax, like what producers of oil and other natural resources pay that the timber harvesters would pay into. That also didn't make it through. The legislature did manage to pass some legislation protecting people who've already had their homes destroyed by wildfires. So there's a bill that essentially if you won a settlement from, say, a power company that started a wildfire that destroyed your home, the state won't then take income tax dollars out of your settlement.
Oh my gosh. They were taxing the settlements as income? That is...
Yes, and that...
These are the sort of laws that it's like, yeah, somebody should have thought of that. We do need a law to make that not happen. That's insane.
And your reaction is pretty similar to what we heard when people were discussing this on the House floor.
Oh my gosh, that's outrageous. Finally, this is another one that I'm incredulous about. There was a bill that would have prevented school districts from banning books simply because the authors or characters were immigrants or people of color or LGBTQ+ or like from another protected class. Seems like something everyone should be able to agree on, but that also failed. Who's opposed to that? Like, was that one of the concessions to Republicans to just get some of these bigger bills through?
It wasn't strictly a concession, but it was something that Republicans in the House essentially played their cards so that they could stall the bill long enough that Democrats were not going to stick around 2 extra days just to pass this bill. In this case, it was a bill that, to the sponsors' dismay, became a very political issue. It had a really packed hearing, garnered more public comments than just about any other bill considered this session. And a lot of it was that critics thought that it was going to be taking control away from local school boards or parents to control what children should be reading. The sponsor, Lou Frederick, wanted it to be very clear that he's not trying to tell anyone what they can or can't read. He just wants to make sure that they have access to books, and especially that kids have access to books written by people from their backgrounds and about characters that look like them.
Yeah. I mean, this is the short legislative session. There's a longer session coming up next year, right? When a bill like this fails, just like when they run out of time, is it usually the case that it's implicit that they're going to bring it back next year?
That's usually the case. And in this mm-hmm. particular bill, Senator Frederick definitely intends to bring it back next year. He's optimistic that even in the 8 months or so that pass before he can bring it back, that the level of support his bill garnered will mean that if there are instances where parents or community members are trying to remove books from schools, that they will... that they'll think twice because they know that there's a lot of support for keeping books available.
Finally, these sessions always end with what we call the Christmas tree bill. What is that? And why do we call it the Christmas tree bill?
So that's the last minute budget reconciliation bill. Basically, they have extra money and they send it out to different entities. It's called the Christmas tree bill because it is loaded with spending the way a Christmas tree is loaded with ornaments.
It's such a good image. Like every legislator like hanging their little like pet project on this bill, being like, give me money for this, give me money for that. Did anything surprising make it into that bill this time around?
So I'm still working my way through everything in that bill. But one of the things that really jumped out, especially when we know that there's limits on how much lawmakers were spending on priorities like housing, they managed to fit in tens of millions of dollars for minor league baseball, including $15 million for the Hillsborough Hops, which are going to get funding from the state to help pay for their stadium. And that it's common. I mean, professional sports teams get tons of money from government at all levels, but it is something that jumps out as a very last minute allocation.
That's so funny. Was there anything else that surprised you this legislative session?
Yeah. One thing I was curious about seeing whether this passed or not was a proposal from the city of Salem and one of the state representatives here to have the state start paying fees to Salem and to other cities where state property exists. This system exists in other states like Washington and Olympia, where there's this reflection that it costs a lot of money to have the state own these buildings that don't pay property taxes, and that's bad for city budgets. Your listeners might be familiar with Salem attempting to pass a real regressive payroll tax last year in an attempt to fix some budget woes. That didn't succeed, and there's this real scramble to find funding for the city, possibly with state help, that Governor Tina Kotek, now a Salem resident, is hypothetically in support of, but that just didn't have enough time to get through this year.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense. If you're the mayor of Salem and you're like, it's nice to host you, state government, but we're maintaining all your roads and pipes and everything, and you're not paying any taxes on it. It's like, yeah. Well, thank you so much, Julia. Thank you for walking me through all of this. Do you get a vacation now? Like, do all the State House reporters all just like go to Mexico for a week or something and sit on the beach?
That would be amazing. But no, I'm pivoting right to election coverage. It's filing day, so we will find out by this evening who's running for office and have a couple months to go until the election.
Well, thank you so much for all your reporting and for keeping us informed about what's going on at the state government.
Of course, thank you.
That's all for us today here on CityCast Portland, but thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the show, we'd love it if you would rate it or tell a friend about it as well. Maybe leave us a review. We'd really appreciate it. I'm John Natariani, in for Claudia Meza. We'll be back tomorrow with much more from around the city. Until then, see you at Slim's.